This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Welcome to the Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kunnison. Nasdaq-listed CrowdStrike is a cloud-based cybersecurity player that has seen significant stock price optimism on the back of the pandemic and the subsequent digital acceleration. But with only 9% of revenue derived from Asia, today we explore CrowdStrike's expansion in the region, its presence in Malaysia, and its role in the cybersecurity ecosystem. And to help me with this, I'm speaking with Jagdish Mahapatra, Asia Managing Director of CrowdStrike. Jagdish, welcome to the Breakfast Grill.
Hi, Roshan. Great to have me here.
So, Jagdish, before we get into the numbers and the Asian expansion, let's talk about cybersecurity as it stands today. When we talk about cybersecurity, we tend to lump it into one homogeneous block, but it's actually far more fragmented than that. Could you help break down your particular role in the ecosystem?
If I were to give you an elevator pitch, this is what I'm going to say, right? So, CrowdStrike, we are a global cybersecurity leader. In many ways, we are redefining security for the cloud era. We are all living in times, Roshan, where we are more consuming more from cloud than the device that you're using, right? And so we protect the entire workload, all the endpoint with our platform, which is built grounds up fundamentally with the promise to stop breaches. So think of us, and our platform is called as Falcon. We have a single lightweight agent architecture. And we leverage, obviously, a lot of cloud scale, artificial intelligence, and we offer real-time protection and, most importantly, visibility across the enterprise. That's what helps us prevent the attacks, which is largely comes on the endpoints. And doesn't matter the endpoints are on or off the grid or off the network. Obviously, we have our proprietary threat graph, which is what we take a lot of pride in. That's the one that correlates almost 3 trillion endpoint-related events per week in real time. That's massive, Roshan, if you do the math, across the globe. And that's what actually fuels the world's most advanced data platforms for security. So if there is one thing you want to remember and your listeners should remember about CrowdStrike, we stop breaches.
And Jagdish, when you say endpoints, are you meaning the points where I'm using my computer or the enterprise user is using their device?
Actually, when we define endpoints, I'll probably expand that to a term that's more used in our industry is called workloads. So what I mean by device or workloads is any instance of a compute happening. It could be your devices that you're using, it could be a laptop, your mobile phone, it could be the servers that you're accessing in your organization, it could be a cloud instance in AWS, Azure, whatever your choice of cloud provider is. Any instance of compute, we protect it.
Right,
with one unified agent.
Right, that's very, very interesting. So it's not a device per se, but it's across the line or where computation is done.
Absolutely.
So I think you've described CrowdStrike as the Netflix of cybersecurity, but I think you're a B2B player. So why the Netflix comparison?
Well, that analogy was largely for us to understand how we are disrupting the market. I would say the enterprise world, think of us as kind of the Salesforce of cybersecurity. And why do I say that? It's important for you to get the context here. So look at what Salesforce did to the whole CRM market 15 years back, if you're trending it. There were leaders in the space, I don't want to name them, who obviously were doing it the traditional way. And that's where Salesforce comes in and delivers that from the cloud and builds the first CRM cloud of the world. And then you might have heard about ServiceNow, which comes in and completely orchestrates how you could do a workflow and a completion using, again, leveraging cloud. And look at their valuations today and look at their adoptions and the kind of customer success they've achieved with their key customers. We kind of think of us as we're looking as a third cloud, which is the security cloud. There's never been a security cloud in the past, and that's what we are excited about building.
When I generally think about cybersecurity, the first name that comes to mind, I think, at least traditionally, are firms like Symantec or McAfee. In terms of the competition landscape, are these players your main competitors, or is the native cloud a different field with different players?
See, I think it's a very broad and deep industry with everybody trying to solve the problem. But yes, some of these players, we do compete in the field. But I'm probably will give you a little different context here. I mean, some of the names you've taken I've worked for some of these in the past. I've also worked for network companies like Cisco in the past, so I understand how the network security works and then how, of course, this whole workload security is starts to pan out. But fundamentally, if you look at the industry way of doing it, this is fundamentally a signature update applied irrespective of whether you're using a hardware or a software. And most of the security deployments of the past, of two decades, have been on-premises, in your enterprise setup, within your fortress, with constant signature updates. So if, let's say, there is a new pattern of attack that comes up, you need to download the latest security software version or upgrade version of your operating system for you to be secure, right? That's how it has been. And some of the names you've taken here have done that for years. And let me tell you, that might have worked in the past. But now we're starting to see attacks which do not use any form of signature. We call them as malware-free attacks. That's almost 50% of the successful breaches in the last few years. And that kind of completely blindsides organizations which have relied on those technologies. So we come from when I said that we are redefining cybersecurity, we are redefining in many ways. Number one, we don't have hardware or software. We do that completely from cloud native. Back in 2011, that was a brave call. If you look at it today, it kind of sounds like, yeah, Jagdish, that's fine. I mean, cloud is so much there. It wasn't there 8 years back. And that's the first step we did. We didn't do any of those things that was happening in the industry. Second thing, we said, if you're going to continuously depend on signature-based updates, you're fundamentally behind your attacker in this chase, right? We said no signature updates. We will rely on the power of artificial intelligence and machine learning tools to constantly provide global visibility. So we build that on a model where there are no signature updates. Now imagine, Roshan, in the last 5 or 6 months, we've been living inside our house, working from home or whatever you call it. And imagine all those layers of defense that all the IT team has built over the last 20 years, which basically keeps the fortress very secure, whether it's a firewall or layers of security, is completely off. You're working from your home, and for the cyber attackers, we are the first line of defense, which is our device. And then suddenly, endpoint or workloads become absolutely critical to secure. So we came from that position right from beginning, and from that point of view, we are completely different from them. In many ways, we do compete with them because there are still people who are going through this whole migration. Should I be relying on the old signature-based protection on-prem? And that's the market maturity that we are absolutely taking head on.
I'm glad you brought that up, Jagdish, because we've seen the work from home phenomenon really explode because of the pandemic. And we're seeing what is essentially the fragmented or the remote working situation. And from what I've heard, your solution seems to be one of those things that is meant to help that out, right? Because it's no longer on-premise. You no longer have a fortress or at least a consolidated fortress. So there is a lot of optimism around CrowdStrike, I've seen, around this work from home phenomenon and how this really builds out. Now, if I took a look at annual revenue, it's generally doubled over a year on year since 2017, actually. And that looks to be the case for the last financial year as well. But considering the digital acceleration that we've supposedly been seeing, why wasn't revenue larger than that doubling? I know it's a lot to ask for, but if revenue was already doubling and growing at that rate, shouldn't we have seen a larger growth?
See, if you look at, our last quarter results are there in public, and if you read them clearly, you should have to look at a few other things. Look at the adoption there, okay? We had 960-plus net new customers added last quarter globally. And let me tell you one thing. That's one leading indicator when you start to see these adoptions. Because what happens, Roshan, is every time a customer comes to us, they stay for it. This is a subscription model. Okay, so when we bring on customers, this is not about locking them up for years. That's what has been happening in the past. We provide value right from day one. And unless there is a value, the customers don't stay back. And guess what? We've got the highest retention rate in the world. So what you should be looking at, Roshan, in a subscription model is the ARR model. And that's magical. If you look at, if you trend ARR, you'll start to see where our performance is. If I were to bring this back to our region, Roshan, because it's important, we are seeing significant adoption of cloud and our platform across the board, including Malaysia. And some of them have been using some of these names that you took earlier in the competitive scenario. And you can see that this is changing. If you look at any of the Gartner reports, if you look at any of the Forrester analyst reports, they have started to change significantly in the last few years. And those are kind of trends that should tell you that we believe that we are in a very strong position to continue to bring value to our customers. Because to me, end of the day, if the value is there, customers will stay and they will spend more.
So you cited the growth in users there. How long do you think this growth momentum from the pandemic can last, especially considering that, I mean, we don't know how long this will keep going on?
You know, I obviously, I'm not in a position to give an outlook for forward-looking outlook, but I can tell you one thing is that, you know, while it might have happened for the first time in many ways, haven't you seen disruptions and digital transformations happening because of some of these critical points in history? In my view, I've had conversations with multiple CIOs and CISOs in the region, and all of them have come back and said that they have tried to achieve digitization in 2 weeks or 3 weeks that usually would have taken them 2 to 3 years. Now, why am I giving this data point? Not just imagine. What could have been a three-year project for you? You've completed that. Sometimes some people have done that over a weekend. Obviously, the security is compromised. Obviously, you can't take care of those aspects. And I believe that this is where it's a big opportunity for us to engage with them, make sure that these business models, which are going to be for future, by the way, I don't see them going away. Security starts to be built in integrally. A lot of that has not happened. And that's why I stay extremely optimistic about what kind of adoption we're going to see. We're just getting started in Asia.
So you don't think that a return to a pre-pandemic normal will derail that growth or slow it down?
Well, for all you know now, planning for a pandemic for future will be a critical component of every CIO strategy, every CFO strategy. So I don't think we can now live in a world where some of these things can now be looked at as a chancy thing. It might happen again. It may not happen again. But we've got to be prepared for it. But I, again, believe that some of these changes, Roshan, we are seeing in pandemic days are here to stay. I'm going to see people actually not going to work as we're starting to realize that we need not travel or need not go all the way to our work to be productive and effective. That's a permanent change.
Up next, the Asian expansion and the situation in Malaysia. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. Stay tuned.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kunnison. This morning, I'm speaking with Jagdish Mahapatra, Asia Managing Director for CrowdStrike. Jagdish, you're seeing an expansion into the region. So looking at the numbers here, approximately 71% of second quarter numbers was derived from customers in the US, while Asia is about 9% of revenue at this point, which illustrates, I think, the huge growth opportunity that the region represents. What's the strategy for growth in Asia?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, you're right on the numbers. And that's very encouraging. If you look at where we were 2-3 years back, the growth has been absolutely very, very satisfactory. We've expanded our customer base. We expanded our team, our presence across in the region. We've had customers. Interestingly, this is a company where we had customers in the region before even we started as sales team. And we've had customers in Malaysia even before I joined or any of my team joined in Malaysia. So that's that should tell you a little bit of view around on how we've been welcomed in the region. In the last 2.5 years that I've been here in the role running Asia, we've seen significant adoption across different verticals. Telecom, we're starting to see a lot of interest from banking, from large enterprises, even the mid-sized organizations. Remember, fundamentally, they all have one similar problem. There aren't enough skill sets available for you to have enough visibility around on what's going on. And we continue to see from the attack side, from the cyber attack side, enhanced increase, right? And that we'll talk about that a bit more. So obviously, customers looking at their partner community ecosystem and saying, what help could we get? Because some of the old assumptions of relying on signatures, remember we talked about that, relying on your enterprise layers of security are in the scenario of work from home goes away. And the fact that most of the people who are protecting their assets didn't have much visibility around on what their adversaries were about. We track about 140 threat adversaries around the world, and we bring in that context of what they're up to, what kind of sophisticated tools they're using, and we enrich the protection platform. And that's how we feel we've got some great value back to our customer base.
So I know you highlighted the overall situation and the potential of Asia, but what's the strategy in terms of expansion? Like, what are your most important countries in Asia at this point in terms of market possibilities?
Well, if I start from each segment, we've got South Asia. We have a significant presence in India. We've got an innovation center out of Pune. It's a city 200 kilometers away from Bombay. So that team is huge. We've already got a significant presence of not just sales, pre-sales, but development and engineering capability out of India, which obviously we build for our global products. So that's one key market, and the surrounding markets like Sri Lanka, Bangladesh. And then you come in Southeast Asia, and you're in my world. Obviously, we are extremely focused with Singapore, as we've got a strong base here, Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia, Philippines. And of course, we'll start to expand to the rest of the countries as well. Up there in North Asia, we got a presence in Taiwan. And of course, we just made an entry into South Korea as well. So yeah, fairly well spread out. And all of them are starting to look so exciting that we are now starting to see how we can get even more deeper and broader.
You mentioned that innovation center. That's particularly interesting. Any plans to set up one in Southeast Asia itself?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think it's obviously will be a function of the kind of requirement we have from the ecosystem and the kind of talent we see. So, yeah, I can't comment on that one, Roshan. Mm-hmm. That's not my call to make. But, you know, we've seen all kinds of expansions happening in the region. So, you know, I can't really rule that out, but I'm not the one to really make a comment on that.
No worries. So this, I guess we'll just put it as to be decided, TBD at that point. But just one thing before we move on to the Malaysian focus situation. Now, considering that you're still loss making, I know you can't speak to that, but you're looking at quite a wide expansion. Are you at all concerned about stretching yourself too thin? Because we've seen, you know, other tech companies come into the region, like Uber is the example that we generally use, and then they had to retreat out of the region because they needed to consolidate their base. Is this a concern at all on your part?
Well, Uber is a very different industry, different dynamics. If I were to tell you about how we've expanded, we've had some of our competitors who might have come into the region before, but we really build a strong foundation first out in Australia. Then we build a strong foundation in Japan. It's not like we came in here and said, you know what, we're going to start with all the countries at one go. That's not the strategy we used. We build a strong foundation in Australia, build in Japan, as I told you. Then we starting now expand significantly in Asia. Then in Asia, as you heard, we started with investment in India, and then the key markets in Southeast Asia, and then the key markets in North Asia in phases. So we entered South Korea now. We were not there last year. So yes, we got a very thought out plan. We want to really make sure that we build strong foundation, strong references, because one of the things we see a lot of value is our customers who've been with us for years are always our first advocates. They are the one who are more keen to really share about the journey because they haven't seen something like that coming from a cybersecurity company for years.
Now, let's talk about Malaysia then. What's your presence in the country currently? Do you have any major clients here?
Yes, we have a strong base of customers out there from different verticals, from different, you know, media industry, telecom, and other enterprise as well.
Are they mostly the big MNCs or the big Malaysian companies or SMEs? What's the breakdown like, if you can shed some light there?
Yeah, I'm not counting any of the global MNCs. If I come to count them, Roshan, then obviously that paints it in a different world. There are global banks and who already got a presence, and I'm not counting them. They're all Malaysian-based companies from and large brands, big brands, and of course, the mid-sized ones are picking up a lot in the last 6 months.
Right, I'm going to push my luck a little bit here, but can you name any of the big clients that you have, or is that something that you can't share?
You know, here's the thing, right? I mean, because we are protecting such critical assets for them, we have to have their permission to share their names. And I, at this point in time, I don't have a public reference out of Malaysia. Unfortunately, I can't name them to protect their identity, but you can rest assured. These are logos you'll see on billboards every time I look around and driving from the airport to the corporate center. I am so proud to see the logos being protected by CrowdStrike. Can't name them. Sorry about that.
No worries. We'll just keep looking at all the billboards to see on the road and try and play a guessing game. But, you know, that's the private side of the situation. But what about dealings with the government? Do you work with governments or the Malaysian government in particular?
Yeah, great question. We do obviously work with governments around in the region, including Malaysia, with the regulators, with key government agencies as well. And I'm quite surprised with the openness we've seen in Malaysian government. I mean, again, I can't give you a reference, but one of the early customers for us has been a government agency. So yeah, we take a lot of pride with the support we've seen from Malaysian government.
Right. And, you know, there's this a CrowdStrike survey of business decision makers in Malaysia, and 70% of respondents are worried about potential cyber attacks in the next few months. I think the survey was released in August or July, and it's at 6 months at that point. So looking forward, especially as more companies move to the cloud, what are going to be the key trends that we need to pay attention to, or at least these respondents need to pay attention to?
Yeah, thanks, Oshin, for asking that. This is a report we came out for the whole of APJ on the state of cybersecurity in the midst of pandemic. This is around end of May when we did that, early June. And we covered around the top 10 countries of APJ, and we talked to almost 2,000 plus business leaders, including Malaysia. Now, and the reason pretty obvious, right? I mean, everybody working from home, security completely getting exposed. So interesting data points for Malaysia, right? I mean, some of that fits in very well with what we heard from the other countries, but almost 8 out of 10 Malaysian leaders felt that cybersecurity is a top priority. And obviously that goes back to your point, saying almost 71% of them believe that they would increase their investment in cybersecurity in the next 6 months because they're all concerned. 7 out of 10 actually were clear that cyber attacks is one thing that they're concerned in next 6 months. In fact, that could be one of the top three threats to their business outside of pandemic. Of course, pandemic by them was an acceptable term, but they were saying that cyber attacks could be among the top three threats to their business. So kind of doesn't surprise me because we also heard many of them saying that they expect the tech budgets because of the digitization initiatives to really grow as well. So kind of if you put all that together, there is clearly an impetus to improve digitization, embrace cloud. But while you're doing that, cybersecurity seems to be one of the top three priorities, top three concerns across the Malaysian leaders.
And on that note, Jagdish, I'd like to thank you for spending some time with me today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure spending time with you.
And a pleasure speaking with you. I was speaking with Jagdish Mahapatra, Asia Managing Director for CrowdStrike, and you've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanasan for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.